Good to be with you. I think last time I was here was the big give back, and I am still blown away at what was done here in the city. Amazing. I mean, I was like, holy cow, wow, boom, boom, pow. Like, this is incredible stuff. I love seeing the impact that's being made in a city, and I believe that greater things are still ahead. Anybody believe that? Come on now. We haven't finished. We're not done. Got bigger things to do. You got enough energy for that? Bigger things? Come on. All right, let me ask it this way. If you had some crappy days, anybody had some, you know, talking about just like it wasn't good. That was difficult, right? But you know what? Here's the thing. You're still here. You're still alive. You're still ticking. You're still going. And the truth is, we all have some of those days behind us. But the fact that you're still here says something. It says God has something better in store. We're going to make it through this. We're going to go where God has good plans for us. Hebrews chapter 13, verse 8, the Bible says Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Now, if Jesus wasn't perfect in every way, that verse would disturb me because I'd be like, somebody needs to change. For instance, if that verse is about me, it'd be no good. Because you'd be like, wait a minute, Brian has been the same yesterday, today, and forever. Like, oh no, we're due for a bad forever. Like, that guy has some problems, and that's the truth. That's why I'm changing. That's why I'm growing. That's why I'm learning, because I don't have it all together. But Jesus is perfect in every way. He's always been good. He's good today, and he always will be good. And so when the Bible says he's the same yesterday, today, and forever, we're like, yes, thank you very much. He was good before, he's good today, and he will be good tomorrow. Jesus is God's expression of grace to us. And so no matter what you've been through in the past, no matter what your past looks like, no matter how many failures that you've experienced, how many challenges and difficulties, how many skeletons are in your closet, how many things you want to kind of hide and keep under wraps, I want you to know there's grace for your past. There's grace for the things that you've done. There's grace for the things that have been done to you. There's grace for your yesterday. There's also grace for your today. The challenges that you face today, the battles, the struggles, the difficulties, the things that you're fighting right now, there is grace for you today. His grace is sufficient for you. When you're weak, he's strong. And there's grace for our tomorrow. We don't have to live in fear, being, you know, like all stressed out about what's going to happen tomorrow. We're not like that, because we know that he's with us, that he's for us, that we have grace for tomorrow. So the challenges that are ahead for us, no problem, because he is with us. Greatest days are still ahead. You know, I think about building a better tomorrow. I think about the importance of legacy, the idea of not only me doing good things today, but the good things that I do today living even beyond me. Like that they're moving forward, that in the future there's still going to be the impact of the choices that were made today. I want to build a better tomorrow today. And in order to do that, in order to have that kind of a lasting legacy, it's important that we are people who last, people who stick it out, people who don't just turn and run, but we keep on going. Lasting legacies come from people who last. We need to be fully present today. Like, we need to be here, present, healthy, growing deep roots. In order to be fruitful tomorrow, we have to have deep, healthy roots today. When I think about legacy, I can't help but thinking about this word permanence. That's kind of a weird word. It's not what they used to do in the early 80s with hair to give you a fluff. Like, that's not what I'm talking about. That's a permanent. But do people still do that? I don't know. I have a confession, though. I have like frizzy, I mean, I'm like a white guy with an afro when I had hair. And it used to always bother me. You know how you want the opposite of what you have? You got curly hair, you want straight. You know what I'm saying? You got straight hair, you want curly hair. So I had this afro untamable thing. And I used to get my hair relaxed. It's like reverse permanent. You know what I'm saying? It's like permanent solution combed out to make your hair go straight. But that's not the kind of permanent I'm talking about. Permanence means lasting, enduring, staying. And in order to leave a legacy, we have to be permanence kind of people. We stick it out. We have deep roots. My father worked at one place for his entire career. So from the time he got married until the time he retired, he worked in one place. It was called Puget Power. It's the electric company in sort of the King County area. And they eventually changed it into Puget Sound Energy. But his entire career was there. He started out being a lineman, climbing line poles, and then eventually over the years got into management and like was in charge of the guys climbing poles. But for 40 years of his life, he worked at that place. My parents have lived in the same neighborhood for 40 years. They've been there that entire time. They've gone to the same church for that entire time. The church that I went to when I was a kid, the church that I got saved in, the church that I got married in, my parents still go to that church. My parents have a close circle of friends that have been in their lives for multiple decades now. And they've made a positive difference in their church and in their community. And I believe one of the key secrets to their difference-making ability, why my parents have made a positive impact, is not because of some like really fancy thing that they've done or just like something that would blow your mind. It's actually really simple. It's that they stuck it out. They stayed in one place for a long time. They have permanence. They haven't picked up and gone somewhere else. They didn't bounce, but they lasted. They didn't bounce from place to place, from cause to cause, from religion to religion. They had permanence. They had staying power. And I'm convinced that lasting legacies come from people who last. Maybe the idea of permanence isn't very sexy or alluring. Maybe bouncing from one thing to another is a little bit more exciting. But trees that are constantly uprooted and transplanted repeatedly, multiple times, will always struggle to thrive and produce fruit. Many times they'll just die. They'll just give up. You can't keep transplanting something and have it thrive and produce something. Thriving and producing fruit comes from deep, healthy roots, which is why God told his people in Jeremiah chapter 29, verses 5 and 6, he said, build homes and plan to stay. Build homes and plan to stay. Plant gardens and eat the food they produce. Anybody have a garden? I grew up, both my wife and I grew up with parents that have like property, you know, like more than an acre, and vegetable gardens, fruit trees, things like. I grew up, actually it's really kind of weird because I grew up in Skyway, which is really more of a ghetto area in South Seattle. And our neighbors were like growing weed in their backyard. And you know, so they had green vegetables they were smoking, and we were growing green vegetables that we were chopping up and putting in our salad for dinner, you know what I'm saying? But I grew up with the idea that you go out into the backyard and you pull some carrots and you grab some lettuce and some peas and you bring it in and wash it and cut it up, and like a lot of what was put on our table didn't come from the grocery store, it came from the yard. We picked apples and made apple juice. We had grapes and made our own grape juice. Like I'm used to that idea of going out into the yard and getting stuff and like you eat the food that you produce. Kind of cool, I don't know. Now I live in a house where it's like postage stamp lot, so you can walk 3 steps out the back door and you hit the fence. There's not a whole lot of room for garden, but my wife, because she grew up with it, she's got these barrels and she's been planting stuff, and there's lettuce and kale and tomatoes. She got a tomato plant that she's counted, there's 49 tomatoes on it. You're amazing. It's a miracle. So we've been eating the food that we grew. And this is what God was telling his people. Build homes, plan to stay, plant gardens, and eat the food that they produce. Marry and have children. Then find spouses for them so that you can have many grandchildren. I've been quoting that to my daughter. She's 11. I'm like, don't you even worry about it, baby. I have it covered. I will find you a husband. And when you're 25, I will tell you about it. I'll introduce you to him. I've selected him. Here is the one for you. He's godly. He's wealthy. He's good looking. And you know, when I used to tell her that, she was like, okay, thanks, Daddy. That's cool. Who is he? I'm like, don't you worry about it. I got it covered. And lately, now that she's like 11 going into sixth grade, middle school, she's been going, Dad, when did you start dating? Why do I have to be 25? When did you get married? And she knows, oh, I got married when I was 21. I'm like, don't ask questions. Just be quiet. I'm trying to obey God here. Just be quiet, girl. Find spouses for them so that you may have many grandchildren. Multiply, do not dwindle away. What I want you to notice about what God is telling his people is something very important. It's at the very beginning. It says this, build homes, stay. Plant gardens and eat what they produce. Get married, have children. Find spouses for them so that you can have many grandchildren. Don't dwindle away, thrive. The thriving, the food being produced, the fruitfulness and thriving come after build homes and plan to stay. That's permanence. Build homes and plan to stay. That's like deep roots. That's I'm planted. I'm here. I ain't going anywhere. And in this place, I will produce. And in this place, I will be fruitful. And in this place, I will make a difference. And in this place, I will leave a legacy. The fruitfulness, the thriving comes after the build homes and plan to stay. So marriages can't thrive where spouses aren't willing to stay. Churches won't thrive where pastors and leaders and people aren't willing to stay. A city can't thrive where God's people, Christian people, aren't willing to stay. Thriving and producing healthy fruit comes from deep roots. There's a story in the Bible that I love. You know it well. It's of David and Goliath. And it's one of those, you know, champion stories, exciting. But I like the part that's just before it, because David wasn't a soldier. David wasn't, you know, going to battle. David was a shepherd boy. He had older brothers that were in the army, and the older brothers were, you know, there in Israel's army, and the Israelite army was against the Philistine army. And the Philistine army had this champion, this giant named Goliath, that was out there taunting the other army and making fun of them and saying, you know, we're going to conquer you guys, and your God's going to do nothing for you. It's like the biggest, baddest UFC guy ever, and no one's willing to step up and fight him. And so David's out watching the sheep. He's, you know, he's too young to be in the army. He's got just kind of like a babysitting job, you know what I'm saying? It's not even babysitting people. It's babysitting sheep and goats. And so he's out there by himself writing songs, doing whatever. And his father says, hey, I want you to go. I got some cheese sandwiches. I want you to take your older brothers and see how they're doing. Deliver the cheese sandwiches and then, you know, give me a report. Come back and tell me how they're doing. And so David does what his dad says. He takes a little lunch bag full of cheese sandwiches and goes off to see his brothers. He delivers the cheese sandwiches. And when he's there, he hears this champion, Goliath, shouting out, mocking God's people. And he starts asking about it, like, what's up with this? How come no one is fighting this guy? Won't anyone step up? And everyone's like, we're scared. And so David starts asking more questions, like, well, what's in it for the person who will fight him? And basically David goes, well, I'll do it. None of you, so I'll do it. Like, I'll go after him. And in that moment, the word goes back to the king, and the king hears that someone's asking and, you know, wants to go fight the champion. And he understands that it's David, this teenage boy. And this is how Saul, King Saul, responds to this whole thing. It's in verse 33. He says, don't be ridiculous. There's no way you can fight this Philistine and possibly win. You're only a boy, and he's been a man of war since his youth. But David persisted. I've been taking care of my father's sheep and goats. What? So? I mean, that'd be like David saying, I've been working the drive-thru at McDonald's now for 18 months. Like, so? Biggest, baddest UFC champion ever? What's that? So you won a battle against a French fry. Come on, buddy. I've been taking care of my father's sheep and goats, he said. And when a lion or a bear comes to steal a lamb from the flock, I go after it with a club and rescue the lamb from its mouth. And if the animal turns on me, I catch it by the jaw and club it to death. Well, hold on now. That sounds a little bit extreme. See, I worked at an animal hospital for 9 years. And I've been bit by a lot of animals, mostly cats and dogs. And they did not teach us at the animal hospital how to deal with these animals. They didn't say, grab it by the jaw, because the jaw has teeth in it. What they told us to do is avoid the teeth. Get that animal in some kind of UFC jiu-jitsu hold where it can't bite you. And use leashes and poles and stuff, like keep the jaw away from you. But David's like, I grab it by the jaw and I take my club and club it to death. What in the world is this kid on? I got, you know, animal battles. I mean, there was one Australian sheepdog. Those are those crazy looking dogs with two different Marilyn Manson color eyes, like one spooky eye and one normal eye, right? And I had to put this dog up into something, and so I had to pick it up at the animal hospital. So I reach under the correct way and pick it up under its legs. And so his face is right over here. And all of a sudden, Marilyn Manson freaky eyes looks at me. And he goes, arr! And just bites me in the face. Got a scar on my cheek from that dog. And in that moment, as it's biting me, I'm thinking, oh, no, you didn't. I was so mad. I threw that dog up in the air, and NFL punted it right there in the air. I wanted to club it to death. If I had a club, I might beat it. Instead, I just kicked it midair. Some of you don't know what happens to your animals when you take them to the animal hospital. Generally, I'm staying away from an animal's mouth. And, you know, other animal battles that we have, we live in Maple Valley, which is sort of like, it's a little bit sort of in the outdoorsy wilderness kind of area. There's lots of trees. There's lots of animals. There's raccoons that come up on our back porch all the time. And there's this one big fat one eats everything that's around, always bugging us. We call him Rocky the raccoon. And then we when we moved there, we had a couple of cats, and they were like outdoors. And they got eaten by, I think, coyotes or something. They're gone. And so, like, there's animals that are wild that are out there, and they would come up into our property. And I'm not grabbing anyone of them by the jaw. Like, no, thank you. And this is kind of a confession that's a little bit embarrassing as a white guy standing before you in Yakima to say this, but I don't have guns. Like, I'm actually afraid of guns. I kind of had a bad experience, and it's not really what you think. Like, I went out with some friends when I was younger to go shoot guns somewhere. And they had all the guns and stuff, but I was, like, inexperienced, and I shot guns for, like, half an hour with them and thought it was cool and stuff. And then it was, like, shotgun and do, like, a clay pigeon in the air, and it hurt me. And also, like, this is just really embarrassing, but the like, jerk, the kickback thing and the noise made my equilibrium, like, in my ears get all off, and I felt sick. Shooting guns makes me feel sick. Like, I wanted to throw up, and I had to go lay in the car while my friends are out there shooting guns. I'm laying in the car like, oh, I'm sick. I don't ever want to see a gun again. So to fight off the animals in my backyard, I went to the store, and I got an airsoft gun. Shoots a little plastic pebble. And that was fun, shooting my the people that work with me, like, you know, bring it out of my office and shoot somebody in the office. But then I thought, I probably need something a little more high power, so I decided to really go for it. I went to Walmart, and I got myself a BB gun. CO2 cartridge, you know. And every time Rocky the raccoon would come out there, I'd open up the door and get my BB gun and, like, aim at it. But it's in it at night, and it's dark, and I can't see. I was thinking, can I get a laser pointer for this gun? And then the neighbors are so close that if I shoot, it's bouncing around, hitting houses in my neighborhood. I'm like, I'm going to get arrested for this. People are not going to be happy with me. So I decided to just give up on guns entirely. I had a bad experience with guns. I'm not good with guns. So now when Rocky the raccoon comes off my back porch, I go to the freezer, and I'd reach in, and I grab some ice cubes. And I run out there real quick, and I throw ice cubes at Rocky. And Rocky runs away. And 3 minutes later, when I'm sitting down watching TV, Rocky's right back where he was before. David, I mean, when David says, I grab it by the jaw and I club it to death, I'm thinking, bro, that is extreme. Like, everyone would totally understand if you went home to your dad and said, hey, I'm sorry, Dad, but a bear came today and Fluffy is gone. You know, we lost one. We lost one. I brought home some wool. So here's Fluffy's wool. And, you know, sorry, you win some, you lose some, right? But like, it'd be totally understandable. Like, you're a shepherd boy. You're not like, who's expecting you to club to death lions and bears? But that's what he's doing. And he's saying, I'm going to go after this champion, this giant, because I've already done it over here. I've done this to both the lions and bears, and I'll do it to this pagan Philistine too, for he has defiled the armies of the living God. The Lord who rescued me from the claws of the lion and the bear will rescue me from this Philistine. I like that. I like that what he was doing as a shepherd boy was speaking to his future. It was speaking to his tomorrow. What he was doing today was speaking to his tomorrow. I believe that your current actions, the things that you are doing today, prophesy to your tomorrow. They're setting the stage. They're preparing the way for what will happen tomorrow. And when we're willing to do some extreme things today, it sets us up for a better tomorrow. Shepherd boy didn't really have to club to death lions and bears, but he did, and it set him up for a greater tomorrow. There's an African proverb that says, tomorrow is pregnant, and no one knows what she'll give birth to. That's true. You know, I mean, we don't know what tomorrow holds. We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. There's no way that we can ensure exactly what's going to take place tomorrow. But when you are pregnant, you do everything within your power to make sure you have a healthy baby. You stop smoking and drinking, and you take vitamins, and you eat healthy, because you're going to do everything that you can do to ensure a healthy delivery and a healthy baby, right? We don't know what tomorrow holds. We don't know what it's really going to look like, but we can make choices today that help create a healthy, strong tomorrow. So what we're doing today speaks to our tomorrow. Your yesterday is not connected to your tomorrow. I need help. So come on, I need some help, Pastor Mekon. Yeah, I need one more. Oh, thank you, Pastor April. We'll put Pastor April in the middle this time, so you don't have to hold on Damien's hand. Yep. All right. Yes. Exactly. This is tomorrow. This is today, and this is yesterday. Yesterday, today, tomorrow. I want you to notice something. Yesterday is not touching tomorrow. Yesterday is only touching today. What you've been through, the mistakes you've made, your yesterday, it still has impact on your today. You live with some consequences. There's sometimes scars and wounds and things that you're dealing with that are from your yesterday. But your yesterday is not touching your tomorrow. And we can do this. We can let go of our yesterday so that we have a better tomorrow. We don't have to take this with us. Your yesterday doesn't have to touch your tomorrow. And what you do today, the choices that you make today are building a better tomorrow. All right, thank you guys. You guys go. The only thing connected to your tomorrow is your today. Your yesterday doesn't touch your tomorrow. And so today is important. I want to challenge you. Get on it. There's no time like today. There's no time like today to kick the habit. There's no time like today to get yourself free. There's no time like today to apply for that job. There's no time like today to get married. If you're 25 and your dad has picked a good man for you to marry. There's no time like today to have children, given that you're now 26 and you've been married for a year to the man that your father picked out for you. There's no time like today to serve the church. There's no time like today to start that business that's in your heart. Get on it. You know, I think about Jacob and Esau in the Bible. You know that story? It's like the burly man, Esau, hairy, burly man, and his brother Jacob, the metrosexual. Got, watch the Home Garden Network and, you know, like to work in the kitchen, clean hands, and... it wasn't good at shooting guns. Anyway, Esau was out hunting, and he comes home, and he's so hungry. And he's like, I'm so hungry, I'm going to die. He's like, somebody give me something to eat. And Jacob, he'd been cooking. He's like, I'll give you some of this stew, Dinty Moore stew. I'll give you some stew if you sell me your birthright. And Esau's like, what good is my birthright going to do? What good is my inheritance going to do me? Because I'm going to die of starvation. Give me the stew. And so he sells his tomorrow. He sells his future. He sells what should be ahead of him for immediate gratification. And sometimes we do that. We jeopardize our tomorrow because of something we feel we need or want today. We want to feel good. We want that relationship so bad that we'll go ahead and sacrifice our tomorrow. The choices that we make today speak to our tomorrow. We prophesy our tomorrow with the decisions that we make today. Your tomorrow is touching your today. They're connected. What you're doing today touches your tomorrow. Joshua chapter 3, verse 5. Joshua's leading the people of Israel, and they're about to go from the desert into the promised land. So they're going from, you know, a not-so-cool place into a really cool place. God's about to do something big, and they know it. They're, like, on the verge. They sense it. Have you ever been like that? Have you ever just sensed, like, I'm on the verge of breakthrough? Anybody? I've been through some crap, and it's been bad, but I'm on the verge of something better. Anybody, you know what I'm saying? It's sort of like, I survived. I made it. That was tough. I lived through it. That was not fun. That was painful. That hurt me. But I'm still here. I'm still ticking. I'm still going. And I feel like there's something greater ahead. Anybody ever been there before? And that's where Joshua and the people of Israel were. And this is what he does. He prepares them. He says, hey, consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do amazing things among you. That word consecrate, he's just basically saying, get ready, get ready, get ready. Prepare yourself today, because tomorrow the Lord is going to do something amazing. Today touches tomorrow. What we do today speaks to our tomorrow. We got to get ourselves ready today for the good things God is going to do tomorrow. It's time to get on it. It's time to prepare ourselves. God, what we're doing right now, the decisions that we make right now, are speaking directly to our tomorrow. We want to leave a lasting legacy. We want to make a difference. We want our family to be different. We don't want the same things that we grew up with. We want to pass on something better. And it comes from what we do today. Prepare yourselves. Get yourself ready. Get ready, get ready, get ready. What is going on today in your marriage, what's going on today in your family, what's going on today in your finances will speak to your tomorrow. Get ready today, for God is about to do something amazing tomorrow. I love that verse in the Bible that says, sorrow may last for the night, but joy comes in the morning. You might have gone through some serious junk yesterday, but God is about to do something great tomorrow. So get ready today. Get ready today. Get ready today for your tomorrow. Why don't you stand to your feet with me? We're going to pray together.